You're listening to Pastor Bill Surjack.
This morning we're just looking at the first chapter of Genesis, beginning with verse 14 through verse 19. God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth." And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the star. God set them an expanse of the sky to give light to the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. Thank God that He has not left us alone to know what He is like, but He's revealed Himself in a way that we can understand, by becoming a man, the person of Christ, and that revelation is accurately attained in this holy word. I've had people tell me that this is where one of the contradictions, those famous contradictions that is in the Bible, that you can find in this verse right here. The contradiction that they say is a contradiction is because God, at the very beginning on the first day, said, "Let there be light." And then it wasn't until the fourth day that He created the sun and the moon and the stars. And so how in the world could there be light without the sun and the moon and the stars? I don't really find that a contradiction in the Bible. I find that a problem of the way people think. I've said before that one of the real problems that we have in the way, particularly of looking at the universe, is that we tend to think in terms of the universe being infinite and eternal, because that's the way we were taught to look at it as we were growing up. To the point where almost every time we imagine God in some way, we see Him inside the universe, because we see the universe as being eternal and infinite, so God must be somewhere inside of it, because that's the way we begin to think. We tend to think that everything that is there came from the universe. The only way that then you could get light would be to be able to have a source of light somewhere in the universe that would then give light, and the only one that we would think of would be the sun or the stars, which are also suns, or the moon that reflects light. So God could not have possibly created light without first creating the sun, the moon, and the stars. The fallacy of that is part of the fallacy of the way we think. And it really is a fallacy in thought, even scientifically. A lot of scientists don't even think that way anymore. One of the first ones who fortunately didn't start thinking that way was Albert Einstein, because Einstein talked about the basic building blocks of the universe. He had this formula that he devised called E equals mc squared. Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. And the way Einstein was thinking was that the basic building blocks of the universe, the basic building blocks of everything out there, is energy, mass, and the speed of light. Or light in some way comes before as one of the very basic building blocks of the universe. Einstein's theory of relativity said that everything is relative to the speed of light, that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. Now, usually people say, well, everything is relative, and they're usually talking about morality. And really, Einstein's theory of relativity had nothing to do with morality. It was a physical theory that nothing can go faster than the speed of light. So as an object approaches the speed of light, its mass becomes infinite, and it can no longer be accelerated. Even at the point in quantum physics, if you have two objects moving apart, like if one object is moving one way at 6/10 the speed of light and another object is moving another way at 6/10 the speed of light, how fast are they moving apart from each other? Our logic would say, well, you add up the 6/10 and the 6/10 and you come up with 1.2 times the speed of light. That's how fast they're moving apart. And actually, according to Einstein's relativity, they're moving apart at 0.83 the speed of light, which is less than the sum of the two. And the reason being because nothing can go faster than the speed of light, because light is one of the building blocks of the universe. Don't ask me to explain that any further than that. I'm not sure that I even got all that right. And I don't know why that works. Somehow Einstein came up with it, and even as they've experimentally looked at that in the laboratory, it comes out that way. So light is one of the basic things that God used to build the universe. When He said at the very beginning, "Let there be light," and there was light, that may be one of the first things that He did. at the beginning, I guess if you were there on that first day, there was just light all over the place. It wasn't seemingly coming from anywhere. Some people even think that maybe heaven might be a little like that. There just might be light there without a particular source of light. I can see how it could be that way. The way the book of Genesis wants us to begin to think of the universe is not so much so that the universe is eternal, but that God is the one who is eternal. And everything that exists comes from God's word. All through the first chapter of Genesis is, and God said, and it was so. And God said, and it was so. So the basic way that the universe operates, or the basic way that the universe is there or exists and continues to exist, is because God says so. And that's the point of the eternal. The eternal is not the world itself. You have to step back one more layer from the universe to be able to get to the eternal. The eternal is God. That means that when we're starting to think about the world or thinking about the universe, we need to go all the way back to the basics. And we need to start thinking about God. It's not just a matter that we can figure out our lives and make our lives work. It's a matter that we need to start thinking about God in the middle of them. And what God has said in God's word in the middle of life is what begins to make life have order and direction. We can't just think in terms of merely the material or merely what God has given us in this world and then try to make it work. The world, the universe, any kind of order in our lives flows from what God has said. And one of the first things that he used to be able to build the universe was light. And so what he is doing here the fourth day is not so much making light. He's already done that. He's ordering light so that you begin to have the light in the day and in the night. And then you begin to have the seasons. What God is doing in this fourth day is establishing a rhythm to life. He's establishing the sun and the moon and the stars and in a way establishing the seasons. And that's an incredibly important part of life. Well, I hear the term today that makes me really nervous, and the word is 24/7. People talk about being available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. When I think in terms of 24/7, I say that's wrong. That's not the way we operate. We don't operate from our own point of view. We operate from the rhythm that God has established in the universe. This is what he was doing that fourth day. He was establishing a rhythm of seasons, a rhythm of days, a rhythm of, I guess you would say, awake and sleep, a rhythm that is there and built into the universe. Part of our job is not to be able to go continuously without any kind of a rhythm. That seems to be almost the ideal in a lot of people's thinking today. What we have to do is just to be able to go continually and go as hard as we can. But that's not what God has done. Right from the very beginning, and he said it was good, he established a rhythm to the universe. A light, dark, seasons, a basic rhythm that we need to be fitting into rather joyously. And sometimes rather quietly. One of the things that I like about the monastery when I go there for some of my downtime is that there's a defined rhythm to the day. There's Vespers at 4 a.m. that you get up and you basically pray for an hour. And then there's communion at 7 o'clock. There's another service at 8. There's Vespers at the end of the day at 5. And there's Compline, that's sort of like the good night time to God, which is at 8:30. And your day revolves around those times and those rhythms. I find that a very relaxing place to be. When I fall into the rhythm of that, I actually begin to see more of the rhythm than of the whole universe. I remember sitting on the porch one time just before lunch watching the trees move and seeing just the rhythm of the movement of the trees. It's almost like I was starting to fit more into the rhythm that was there in the universe. Many times when we get into a new situation, new babies at the home, new jobs, new things like that, one of the first things that we start thinking, I'll be okay when I can finally establish some sort of a rhythm. When I can finally establish a certain amount of time when I do this, then I do that, then I do that. If we are continually in a process of upheaval, we don't do very well with that. So the primary thing that I think God was establishing here on the fourth day was the rhythm that is there in the universe. And the very basic part of the rhythm that he gave was light and darkness. I would say a lot of the mental anguish that we have in our world today is due to the fact that we don't establish a rhythm to life. We become frantic all the time. We don't have a Sabbath. We just kind of keep going from one day to another, to another, to another. So we always feel guilty, and we always feel tired. When we stop to rest, we feel guilty because we think we should be doing something when we're resting. And when we're working, we start thinking how much we need the rest. And if we can establish a rhythm of work and rest, you can say, well, this is the time when I'm supposed to work. This is the time when I'm supposed to rest. And you can begin to establish a rhythm to life in general. And I think this is one of the things that God was doing when he created the stars and the heavens, was just establishing a whole rhythm to the world that he was making. And he was saying, this is good. This is something worthwhile. This is something you need to fit into. That's one of the things I like, the change of seasons. I like the sense of going from one season to another to another. By the time I get tired of winter, spring starts to come. And then summer, and by the time it gets too hot for me in summer, fall starts to come. And then winter, and the rhythm goes on. And it's a helpful way for me to move from one year to the next. One of the other things we might notice here is that God said that the darkness was good. And sometimes kids tend to be afraid of the dark, maybe for good reasons. I tend to be afraid of the dark once in a while. And the reason is we've had it in our minds that there's a certain evil to darkness. But God said here, darkness, and he called it good. Probably the reason the New Testament particularly begins to associate evil with darkness is because of what darkness is. Darkness really isn't anything. If you were a physicist, you would have said, there's a lot of light missing here. You wouldn't have really said it's dark. Because darkness, to a physicist, is the absence of light. That there's no light there. When the Bible is talking about there being darkness, and darkness is evil, it's not defining an evil in a certain way. That if you do enough bad things, that it becomes evil. What the Bible is saying about evil is that it's the absence of God. It's just that God's not there. He's not there in the midst of what's going on. So our lives can look like they are really good to the outside world. We can be judged by our fellow creatures and said, wow, he's really a good person. But the Bible would say, is God there? Is God really in the middle of all that you're doing? And if God's not there, the Bible would say, that's the root of evil. That's darkness. That's the absence of light, the absence of God. Evil isn't so much a particular way of behaving. It's more a way of behaving without God. Sometimes people who live with God don't look all that good to us from our point of judgment. And sometimes people who live completely without God look pretty good in our way of judging. But what the Bible is talking about with good and evil is whether God's there or he's not there. It's like light and darkness. Darkness being evil doesn't really exist. Darkness is really the absence of light. And in some ways, evil isn't real. It's the absence of God. If you want to cast out darkness, you bring in light. If you want to cast out evil, you bring in God. And pretty soon the evil starts going somewhere. I don't know where darkness goes when the light comes. And I'm not exactly sure where evil goes when God comes. But that's the way we begin to get rid of evil in our lives and in our world is to bring God into the middle of it.